Good evening. Protests in Lebanon in the wake of a devastating explosion. With no deal in sight, will Trump wield executive power? Schools on tap to open for New York, at least for now, and a chance to make housing a human right in New York City. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Friday, August 7th, 2020. Protesters clashed with security forces near Lebanon's parliament buildings in Beirut last night. The protesters are demanding the government resign, blaming corruption for Tuesday's port explosions that injured thousands and caused widespread destruction in the city. The protests came as French President Emmanuel Macron made a visit to Beirut, warning that Lebanon would continue to sink if it failed to address its present political system. And in Berlin, several were arrested at a protest decrying the eviction of a local left-wing pub named Syndikat. Protesters could be seen chanting on the streets and facing off with police who used tear gas and pepper spray. Barricades were set up in solidarity with the pub, which emerged as the center of the neighborhood's left-wing scene for 35 years. And much of Canada's remaining intact ice shelf is broken apart into hulking iceberg islands thanks to a hot summer and global warming. 4,000-year-old Milne ice shelf on the northwestern edge of Ellesmere Island had been the country's last intact ice shelf until the end of July. The breakup is considered to be the result of global warming in the Arctic, brought on by increasing levels of greenhouse gases, the result of uncontrolled industrialization. And Ohio Governor Republican Mike DeWine tested positive for the coronavirus yesterday afternoon, preventing a scheduled meeting with President Trump. But by evening, he was testing negative.
It was a kind of a roller coaster day, as I indicated last night. We started here, went to Cleveland, went to Case to get a test set up by the White House, took the test, left and went to the airport and fully expected to be going in to see the president. Did not have that opportunity because they told me that I couldn't see the president, and the reason was that I tested positive. Then got the good results last night. The test from Ohio State had come back as negative for all of us. They told us they wanted to rerun it just to double check. They reran it. A few hours later, we got a call that those tests had come back negative as well. So we're very happy, obviously happy about that. Southwest.
DeWine was tested as part of the standard protocol to greet Trump. DeWine's office said Lieutenant Governor John Husted was also tested for the coronavirus on Thursday ahead of Trump's visit and tested negative. DeWine has taken aggressive measures to slow the spread of coronavirus in his state, including issuing a stay-at-home order, a mask mandate, closing schools, and postponing the state's primary. Since when is adding 1.8 million jobs in a month a disappointment? At any other time, hiring at that level would be seen as a blowout gain. But after losing 22 million jobs in March and April, economists say unemployed workers need to see much larger increases. According to the Department of Labor jobs report released today, only 42% of the jobs lost since the coronavirus pandemic began have been regained. Though the unemployment rate fell last month from 11.1 to 10.2%, it still exceeds the highest rate during the 2008-2009 Great Recession. And meanwhile, a last-ditch effort by Democrats to revive collapsing Capitol Hill talks on vital COVID-19 rescue money ended in disappointment today. The Washington gridlock means more hardship for millions of people who are losing jobless benefits and more damage to an economy pummeled by the coronavirus. Trump's Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says the president will attempt to bypass Congress and issue executive orders on home evictions and on student loan debt.
The chief and I will recommend to the president, based upon our lack of activity today, to move forward with some executive orders. Again, we agree with the speaker. This is not the first choice, but people have run out of the enhanced unemployment, so that is something we will recommend an executive order on. And it relates to rental foreclosures. We will recommend a executive order on that and also student loans. So it's going to take a little bit of time for us to finalize these and process them, but we'll do them as quickly as we can because the president wants action. He realizes, again, despite what was a big pickup in jobs, there's still too many people that are impacted by this.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. Meanwhile, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer told reporters there was no mention of Trump's executive authority during negotiations today, while emphasizing Democrats' willingness to meet Republicans halfway.
We asked them, had they talked to President Trump about this? They said yes, but we said we hope he'll change his mind because we do want to come to an agreement, very much so. But it's got to be an agreement, as the Speaker said, that meets the needs of kids and not just, they say, my way or no way, because we can't, with that number, meet the needs of workers, of teachers, of schools, of all of these things. And even when they do, if they were to do, and they didn't mention it in the room, an executive order, it didn't come up, it's not going to be done in as good a way. You can't do unemployment benefits in as good a way as you can legislatively. You can't do payroll tax cut, which even their own Republicans are against, if you don't do it legislatively. All these things, you can't do student loans, some forbearance, if you can't do it legislatively, because you can't spend the money, as I understand it. You just have to delay it. You think a small business person is going to want to pay 12 months or 6 months of payroll tax all at once 6 months from now? So we were asking them, come back and negotiate, but realize the House is Democratic. They need a majority of Democratic votes in the Senate. Meet us in the middle. God's sakes, please, for the sake of America, meet us in the middle. Don't say my way or no way, which is what they're saying. They don't want to come off their number.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's willing to compromise with the GOP.
Yesterday, I offered to them, we'll take down a trillion if you add a trillion in. They said, absolutely not. If we could do that, if we take down a trillion and they add a trillion, we'll be within range. We'll be within range. But we must meet the needs of the American people. We could come down some because we can change the dates of expiration, the rest of that, but not undermine our priorities to meet the needs of the American people. And it is, we're in a bit different place. Again, we believe in science and governance in terms of addressing the virus that we need to do, and that's how we're going to open our economy. In terms of livelihoods, we're honoring our heroes. It doesn't do anything for our economy to have more people on unemployment, especially when they are our heroes. Safe schools, we're in a different place because we are listening to what is happening in communities where they're telling us largely they want to have virtual. Out of the 100 top, the largest school districts, so over 60 said they're going to have all virtual. Some a hybrid, very few actually in-person schooling. We want as many kids as possible to go to school, but we have to make it safe for them to do so. And then we have housing insecurity. We have food insecurity. The list goes on and on. I wrote to my colleagues about this today. You've probably seen that. So this is about, I see everything through the eyes of the children. Their food insecurity, their housing insecurity. We can't have our children be hungry. We can't have them be homeless, and we cannot have them be afraid to go to school. And if we are going to be able to have more people go to work, we need childcare. It's always about the children for me. So again, we'll be meeting this afternoon, and I will once again make the offer. We'll come down a trillion, you go up a trillion, and then we'll be within range of each other. But again, this is a very different set of values across the table. Trickle down.
Trickle down economics were first proposed by President Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s, that if you give tax cuts to the wealthy, then their spending will trickle down to the poor and working class. Senate Republicans have been split, with roughly half of Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's rank and file opposed to another rescue bill at all. Four prior coronavirus response bills totaling almost $3 trillion have won approval on bipartisan votes, but conservatives have recoiled at the prospect of another Pelosi-brokered agreement. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Governor Cuomo gave the green light to reopen every New York State school district this fall if they first earn passing grades from the state health and education departments.
by our infection rates, all school districts can open. Everywhere in the state, every region is below the threshold that we established, which is just great news. You look at our infection rate. We are probably in the best situation in the country right now, as incredible as that is. So if anybody can open schools, we can open schools. And that's true for every region in the state, period. Every school district has submitted plans to the Department of Health and State Education Department. Department of Health has the plans. Department of Health can disapprove plans if they're not responsible from a health point of view.
Right. And this governor's go-ahead still requires approval of each district's specific plans from state health and education officials before students return to class. And a positive coronavirus test rate below 5% in their region as well. Cuomo says each district will enjoy wide discretion.
By our infection rates, all school districts can open. Everywhere in the state, every region is below the threshold that we established, which is just great news. You look at our infection rate. We are probably in the best situation in the country right now, as incredible as that is. So if anybody can open schools, we can open schools. And that's true for every region in the state, period. Every school district has submitted plans to the Department of Health and State Education Department. Department of Health has the plans. Department of Health can disapprove plans if they're not responsible from a health point of view.
Cuomo acknowledged he was already deluged with calls from anxious parents and teachers skeptical of whether schools can pull off a safe reopening.
You have some school districts who primarily talk about temperature taking. Yeah, temperature taking. And if a first kid has a temperature, then test that child, certainly. But how about the asymptomatic spread, right? Governor DeWine, Ohio, a great guy, and I hope the negative test is the one that holds. But that's an asymptomatic spread. Nursing homes, asymptomatic spread. So how do you detect the asymptomatic spread in a school unless you're doing testing? If you're not doing testing, the only way you detect asymptomatic spread is when somebody gets sick. And that's a question that the local school districts are going to be asked, I can tell you that, from both the parents and the teachers. The answer is testing. But then the question becomes, okay, what percentage of testing? Who's going to do the testing? Do you have that set up? But that is the conversation.
But Cuomo added parents and teachers are concerned about the plans to reopen. Under his reopening rules, school districts will have to meet with parents and teachers at least three times and at least once just with teachers.
You need two things to open up the schools. Students and teachers. Teachers, you don't want to get into a, I don't think you want to get into a legal battle with the teachers, right? I don't think that's not the nature of the profession or the nature of our relationship. Teachers have to feel safe. They can't teach if they don't feel safe. You're not going to order a teacher into the classroom and say, do your job even though you don't want to be here and you feel like your health may be threatened. They're not going to be able to teach in that environment, and that's not the relationship we have with our teachers. So the teachers have to agree to go back. I am telling you, there is going to need to be significant discussion because teachers are raising many issues. I have had the conversations. These are informed, intelligent conversations. They raise the issue of the hotspot zip codes. They raise issues of contact tracing. They raise issues of testing. And they have to be comfortable. I don't think it's going to be, you don't want to get into a legal battle about it. It's not going to work that way.
Governor Andrew Cuomo. New York State United Teachers President Andy Pallotta said in a statement, "We have been clear all along, health and safety is the most important consideration in reopening school buildings. Viral infection rates tell only one part of the story. Many educators and parents have anxiety about local school district reopening plans that have been submitted to the state." He continues, "If districts need to phase in the reopening of buildings, so be it. We must err on the side of caution." Period. Michael Mulgrew, president of the United Federation of Teachers, which represents teachers here in New York City, said in a statement, "As Governor Cuomo noted, parents and teachers must be confident that schools are safe before they can reopen. In New York City, that is still an open question." The New York City Education Department submitted its 32-page document to state health officials last week, outlining a plan to bring kids to school in shifts to keep in-person numbers down, among other measures. And in the city, the Gothamist reports today, 28-year-old Black Lives Matter activist Derek Ingram found himself surrounded by dozens of NYPD officers as he refused to leave his apartment in Hell's Kitchen today. He live-streamed the event from his window as crowds of protesters gathered on the street and two police helicopters circled overhead. He says, "Members of the NYPD's warrant squad and K-9 unit arrived at his door at 7 a.m. on Friday, claiming they had a warrant for his arrest. A lawyer eventually showed up and the cops went home. They say an investigation is ongoing. It's another of several similar confrontations since protests in the city began over the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police in May." And Mayor de Blasio answered a question today about his homeless policies in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. He defended his use of hotels to house single men as shelters were closed because of unsafe conditions.
The goal here continues to be to deal with the short term, which I'm just going to use a round number. Let's say it's 6 months-ish while we're dealing with this crisis until people are vaccinated. Then once we get through that, we're going to, of course, start to move out of those hotels and go back into the shelter system. But we're going to constantly try and reduce the number of people in shelter with all the other tools we have. We'll have a lot more to say on that in the coming weeks, but I think we're going to have an opportunity here to be creative and continue to get people to other, better housing. Yes, if we have control of a facility and it's no longer needed for shelter, the goal is always to convert it to permanent affordable housing. But we also have to have enough shelter available by law and morally for folks who need it. Are there times when the city can actually buy a building, take over a building, turn it into permanent affordable housing? That's what we've been trying to do more and more. That's actually showing some success. Let them be run by community-based nonprofit, not by folks, you know, trying to make a profit off the misery of others. So that's our main thrust.
Mayor de Blasio. Policy analyst for the Coalition for the Homeless is Jacqueline Simone. She says New York was already in the midst of a homeless crisis when the virus hit and exposed the reality, the long ignored problem and reality, that it's not just women and kids who need a place to live.
The most at-risk population in the DHS shelter system is single adults, and that's because their shelters have historically been congregate dorm-style facilities with shared sleeping, bathing, and dining facilities, whereas families typically have a more self-contained unit already where the family will have their own bathroom, usually their own dining room as well. So, well, not dining room, but kitchen facility. So the people who are at greatest risk were the people in the congregate facilities who are single adults. So this is why the city has adopted this policy of moving most single adults into commercial hotels. We want them to go further. We want them to offer a single occupancy hotel room to anyone who remains in a congregate facility, as well as people who are on the streets or those who are being kicked out of the transit system on any given night with the nightly subway shutdown. But we think that this intervention of moving people into hotel rooms has undoubtedly saved lives.
The mayor seems to want to get people out of these hotels. He said that as soon as it's safe enough to do it and back into shelters. What's your position on that?
We're very lucky that we have the right to shelter in New York City, which is why we don't have the massive tragedy of unsheltered homelessness that we see across the country. But we need to go further. We need to provide permanent housing for people. And the main reason why we have record homelessness is the lack of affordable permanent housing. many of the options that had historically been affordable to people with the lowest incomes, such as SRO housing units, are no longer accessible to people. So I think there's sort of a distinction between the shelter system and using hotels as shelters, which, by the way, do have social service providers and case management and services on site, versus talking about how we can transform potentially vacant hotels or other buildings into permanent housing under more of an SRO model. Right now, we are still in crisis mode, and we still need to be focusing on prioritizing the health and safety of our most vulnerable neighbors. If homeless New Yorkers are relegated to large congregate facilities where the virus is spreading rapidly, we are never actually going to, as an entire city, be safe from the virus.
Potentially, if the economic crisis that looks like it's shaping up, if we head into another great recession that goes on for years or even a depression, could we return to the days of Brother Can You Spare a Dime when there's massive amounts of homelessness and things like that going on?
We are at a fork in the road right now in New York City and across the country, frankly, where we already had a housing and homelessness crisis prior to the pandemic, and the pandemic has really shed a light on these holes in our social safety net and the fact that our current systems were failing to meet the needs of many of our most vulnerable neighbors. I hope that we use this moment to galvanize energy around permanent housing and recognizing that the status quo of 60,000 people in shelters every night plus thousands more on the streets was completely unacceptable. But there is also that very real risk that if we do not take action, and it has to be from all levels of government, we will have a massive increase in homelessness. And we will see the shelter system that was already bursting at the seams grow even greater. And I hope that we don't let it get to that point, and instead we use this energy and this moment to call for more systemic solutions. And we won't address our homelessness crisis until we fundamentally address our housing crisis. I would also say to any neighbors that are dismayed about homeless people moving into their neighborhoods or who feel that they're seeing more homeless people now than before, don't react with disdain toward that human being. They're going through struggles, and all of the issues that we've all been facing throughout this pandemic are only heightened for people who don't even have that basic stability and safety of their own home where they can protect themselves. Instead, think about why we have so many homeless people in the first place, and then call your representatives and don't just say, I want this shelter out of my neighborhood. Say, how do we reduce the need for shelters in the first place? And how do we prevent more people from becoming homeless? And that really requires investments in permanent affordable housing.
Jacqueline Simone is policy analyst for the Coalition for the Homeless. Mayor de Blasio went on to illustrate the city's problem. High taxes drive out the rich who pay the taxes. But de Blasio says the rich will always come to New York.
Let's focus on working people. Let's focus on the millions upon millions of people who do their jobs every day or are fighting to get their jobs back, who need help, who are the backbone of the city, the heart and soul of New York City. They're not going anywhere. They're not fleeing. This is New York. And these are New Yorkers I'm here to fight for. The wealthy have become more global in many ways, not because of this crisis, long before, much less rooted. They will come, they will go. Some are true New Yorkers. We got a lot of homegrown millionaires here. That's great. I know a lot of them really care about New York City and do a lot for New York City. God bless them. The folks who want to be a part of this community, God bless them. And if they've done well in life, congratulations. Now let's help out other people. But I am not going to beg anybody to live in the greatest city in the world. There are plenty of people who want to live in New York City. There are plenty of people who will come here no matter what. This crisis will be over soon. And here's what we found. We actually analyzed this. In recent years, some millionaires and billionaires have left. Some millionaires and billionaires have come in and started to grow roots here in New York City. And here's the most important fact. New York City has bred more millionaires every year in recent years than ever before because up till February, our economy was booming and people from all over the world wanted to come here, sensing opportunity, and they will again.
Mayor de Blasio, one answer to the city's financial ills has been languishing in the city council for some time, reinstating a tax on Wall Street financial transactions. And that's some of the news for Friday, August 7th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News from New York, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.